heroes walk among us. They are in our midst every day. At Heroes in Our Midst, we find them, we celebrate them, and we learn from them. Heroes in Our Midst is a podcast about the power inside the heart, the human behind the story, and the collection of idiosyncrasies that both make us unique and bond us together through a common humanity. Join us as we are inspired, as we learn, and as we are challenged to be better by the heroes in our midst and the stories that they tell. Hey, you guys, I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop, and today's episode of Heroes in Our Midst is a perfect follow-up to the podcast we released last week. Our guest today is Master Jay Park. You see, his daughter, 21-year-old Skylar Park, was our most recent guest, and she is one of the best fighters in the world. Now, if you haven't had a chance to hear it yet, and you don't know, we're talking about Taekwondo. You can listen to it after this one if you'd like. Master Park is not just Skylar's dad, but he has been her coach for a lifetime. And together they have literally become the best in the world. Skylar has already qualified for the 2020 Olympics. Well, the 2021 Olympic Games now. And Jay has been with her every step of the way. Now that brought up a whole bunch of questions in my mind. Family dynamics. The challenge of coaching your own kids, having to wait a whole year now to compete, the final push to try to be the best, and more. Recently, he coaches athletes to a gold and a bronze medal at the Junior World Championships, a bronze medal at the Youth Olympic Games, a bronze medal at the Senior World Championships, and multiple medals at the World Grand Prix. And now, he's ready for his premier athlete, Skylar, to win an Olympic gold. And he, like Skylar, is not afraid to say it. Most of what you hear today will focus on Master Park's coaching, but he was and is an athlete in his own right. So we're going to hear that part of his story too. Jay, welcome to Heroes in Our Midst.
First of all, it's an honor to be, doing this podcast with you. I mean, you're an Olympian, so it's, obviously not just to be here with you, but, you know, to learn from you as well too during this time would be great. I know that you had shared that we kind of share similar situations where I coach my children and you coach your boys as well too. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can have some discussions and see where we can go. I mean, I'm sure you field a lot of questions of how do you do that. And
yes.
Same thing with me as well.
Yeah.
Martial arts, like Taekwondo is part of my life. I mean, I grew up with it. My children are third generation fourth, but it's Taekwondo specific.
Yeah.
Third generation. So my father is a grandmaster, but it's something that we did as a lifestyle. Okay. It kind of sounds cliche, but it is.
Yeah.
So I took Taekwondo in Korea.
Okay.
When I was at the age of 3, and I got my black belt in Korea at the age of 6. I immigrated to Canada with my family in 77, so I was almost 8 years old.
Okay.
And I continued Taekwondo for a while, and then the school that I was going to closed down. So I believe it was grade 3 or 4. My father I brought home this brochure from. That the speed skating community, I guess the Winnipeg Speed Skating Club, they did a little presentation for our school, and I brought it home. I didn't know what speed skating was, but in Korea, that's all they use was speed skates.
Okay.
They didn't know hockey skates, right?
Sure.
So I brought it home. My dad, you're doing this. I'm like, no. And it was kind of interesting because the first time he took myself and my sister, my older sister, there, you know, people are. It's minus 35, they're skating in tights, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. And I had like legs like twigs, so I wasn't built for it to begin with. So I did that for almost 10, 11 years of my life. I've had some success, but obviously my teammates moving on, like Susan Ock and Sean Ireland and Michael Ireland, they're all Olympians. So I made a decision in grade 12 just to kind of move on with my life,
right.
Just made that decision. But I've played a lot of different sports, like volleyball is one of my favorite sports. So it's not because you're sitting in front of me. And track. I mean, I love track. I love all sports. I just wasn't good at swimming.
Okay.
That's pretty much about it. But So now, and in 93, we opened up a school.
Okay.
Just more on a whim than anything else.
Huh.
And we never looked back, which is a blessing in disguise. And I wanted to be a lawyer when I, went to school. I graduated university. And then now it's just a total blessing in our lives, not just my life. So
yeah. Well, Jay, you skirted over when you were young, a black belt at 6 years old. Is that normal?
I know. I don't think so.
I didn't think so either. Wow. Like, were you exceptional at this, or was that sort of, I mean, you were in Korea at the time. So was that kind of the pace that they took you at?
It was, but I think it was more so my father than anybody else. My father actually obviously knew Taekwondo was a black belt and was a master in Korea, but he actually trained the American military officers Taekwondo, you know, in Korea.
Wow.
So, but he never had an official school. So one of his juniors, he sent me to a school that he ran, right? But my father would always be there. So reason why they started me in Taekwondo was because apparently I was really shy when I was young. I used to hide under my mom's dress when people would talk to me because I was that shy.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'm too shy now. I have a little bit of that, but I think that's one of the main reasons.
Sure.
And, but I mean, starting me that young was my mother's idea, just because she didn't want me hiding under her dress and being all shy. But I mean, I would have took it eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, probably maybe at a later age, but not at the age of three. So yeah, it's unique.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly would have had to build your confidence and then accomplishing something like that at such a young age. So you come to Canada, you play all the sports, you love it. Obviously, you're an athletic guy, and you know, even those you were skating next to, right?
Yes.
Even if you didn't reach their heights, you were still in their company. So excellence was something that surrounded you. Now, when you started your school, what was the decision making there? You wanted to be a lawyer, you said, and how do you actually go from thinking about it to actually doing it? And what did that look like for you and your family at that time? Where were you at in life?
What was I in life? I mean, really, you know what? It's a human interest story. If I think about what my parents did, I mean, I have three older siblings.
Okay.
We're all 2 years apart, so I was 7, so 9, 11, and 13, and my parents not knowing a lick of English in 1977. So I've heard for almost about 10 years they try to leave Korea to the U.S. because that's where his friends were, right?
Okay.
His GI friends, as
yes.
you would say.
Yeah.
And so for almost 10 years, denied. And one day they came to my parents and said, okay, you're going to Canada. They're like, where? So they showed them on the map, here's Canada, here's the U.S., and especially back then, like 40-odd years ago, I mean, you know, people don't realize how large things are, right? Especially living in a small country like Korea.
Totally.
So my father's thinking was, oh, okay, we'll just go there and then we'll just, you know, go
move
to
down.
Seattle because that's where his best friend lived.
Okay.
Right? Bobby. So it's kind of funny because they, four young kids, only a couple thousand dollars to their name, didn't have a job, didn't have a place to stay, didn't know anybody. We landed in Winnipeg in April 2nd, and it was freezing. And like I said, I don't know how they did it or why they did it because, you know, they had some kahunas.
Yeah.
Like I said, all we knew was the word hello, ice cream, and stay a little longer. And
I mean, if we think about that now, as parents with our kids, like I don't think we would have the nerve to ever do that. You think about moving to, for myself, let's say, move to Korea,
right.
Not know a stitch. It's amazing what parents did and were willing to sacrifice and willing to risk to do that.
Absolutely. I think now it's much easier because the world is so universal that no matter where you go, especially because we speak the English language,
right.
No matter where you go, you're like, hey, what do you mean you don't speak English?
Right? Yeah, it's true.
Right? Back then, nobody even knew Korean, right?
Yeah.
So it was lucky for us that the immigration officer, she called the president of the Korean Association at that time. The Korean community was very small and just a wonderful family. They took us in, took care of us.
Awesome.
And then from there, my father just met the most wonderful woman, like the bank manager, who with nothing, she believed in my father and loaned the money to buy a brand new station wagon, like a Oldsmobile station wagon within, I think, like 3 months of us being in Canada. and all his Korean friends are like, how'd you get that? You must be rich. Like, no, they just lent me the money. So, I mean, you know what? It's, like I said, it's just
incredible.
Been a blessing. And, you know, her name is Irene Halapchuk. And, I mean, we owe immense to her. I mean, so thinking back at things, it's been amazing. And like I said, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how or why they did it, but
yeah.
I'm glad they did.
Well, incredible. And probably, I'm sure part of it was to give you guys opportunities. And Canada gave you opportunities. And so they took that chance. You obviously took a chance starting this school. It's called TRP. Is that right? TRP?
Correct. Correct, TRP Academy. Mm-hmm. And really, it wasn't just me. It was my myself and my father.
Okay.
So my kids, I mean, my friends growing up, they were always, oh, teach me something, both Taekwondo and Hapkido we do.
Yeah.
And the Hapkido is more self-defense oriented. Okay. So that's what they were interested in. So I've been bugging my father, hey, you know what? We should open up the school. He's like, no. And, you know, they didn't have the high-profile jobs. Both my mom and dad, when they first came here, they worked at a sewing factory, like most immigrants kind of mm-hmm. working their way up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we never really wanted for anything. We didn't have the luxuries in life. But at the time, looking back at it, you know, every weekend we're with the Korean community at the park having barbecues. I mean, simple life, right? Beautiful life. And I'm sure they had stresses of their own. They just never addressed it to us. I mean, you know, money was scarce. And
sure.
But we didn't notice. I mean, when we were kids, we just had lots of fun. And I started university, wrote my LSAT. I was hoping, and I should have, but my application, I was about to send my application in for University of Manitoba Law School. Mm-hmm. And and my father finally said, okay, let's get out of your system. I'll lease this space for 6 months.
Yep.
Do it. So he thought, you know what? Let's get this out of your system. You're going to go on with the rest of your life, right? Because my father wanted me to be an engineer, my mother a doctor, and I chose lawyer since I was young because I can argue well. You know, you kind of like what you're actually good at. So, and we started the school, and it just took off, and we never looked back. And both my father and I convinced my mother to say, give me one more year if this doesn't, you know, just one more year.
Yeah.
So she finally said, okay, and here we are. I mean, I think, you know, not only is our school successful in terms of membership and stuff like that, but it carries the name TRP is Taeryong Park, right?
Okay.
It's named after my grandfather, my father's father.
Oh, nice.
So it's not something that we just kind of take for granted. It's, you know, it's part of tradition and history and everything else. And, you know, my kids are proud of it. And like I said, it wasn't within our radar or a pathway that we chose. This was supposed to be something that I was supposed to give up.
But you didn't.
We didn't. Yes, and we're better for it.
Yes. So there you are. TRP Academy has been formed. And now you're coaching how many kids do you have? Let's start there so we have the full picture.
I have three kids. Okay. My oldest daughter, Skylar. Mm-hmm. And then my two sons, Tegu, and then my youngest one is Braven. So almost kind of 2 years apart type thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Now, is your wife also into Taekwondo? Is this big for her too?
It is, yes. Yeah. She actually, back then in 96 is when I met her as a student of Hapkido. I'd like to believe that I had to kind of chase her off and she was kind of, but she says otherwise. So she really didn't like me at the very beginning because, you know, I mean, I had to play my role in terms of a black belt instructor.
That's right.
And she, you know, she's, yeah, so she wasn't really kind of, but, you know, I told her my pickup line for her was like a mold, I'll grow on you. And I guess it worked because now we're married, we have three awesome kids.
That's
awesome. Yeah, life is great.
All right, let's talk about the dynamic of that now. And I'm really, like you mentioned at the beginning, I'm really curious to have this conversation. But let's, obviously when you started TRP, were you coaching your kids right off the bat? But I don't think so because you were young then.
Oh,
you were younger then.
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't even...
No, I was only 23 at that time.
Yeah.
Right? And again, I got to give amazing credit to my father. I mean, he had a full-time job. He woke up in the morning. He went to work. He came straight to the academy. Barely eat. He would teach all night with me, and we would teach till 9:30.
Yeah.
We'd go home. I was still living at home. We'd go home, and we'd eat, and he'd do this. He'd get up in the morning. And I don't know. I mean, I look back at it, and I think I was a bit of a workaholic, too.
Yeah.
I used to park our deckled minivan out on Pembina by Shapes there back then, and so that we can advertise because he was all deckled up with, and then I'd get on my rollerblades or run, I think it's about 3-4 kilometers or something like that to Clarence.
Yeah.
And then, in between lunch, come back and park it somewhere else. And that was kind of every day and did a lot of stuff. So I think we did work hard for the success.
Yeah.
But we're obviously thankful for it as well, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's where my father is the one that takes credit. I kind of rode his coattails, and he always said, hey, while I'm alive, try something, make mistakes, because I'm always there for you. Your mom and I are there for you.
Awesome.
And, as a safety net.
Oh, that's pretty cool. What a great example. Now you're the father. You've got your three kids. And when did that start? Did you start them early? Did you always want to do that? And what was that dynamic like for you? I know as a parent, when you're an athlete and you are very passionate about something, you're very concerned that your kids will want to, or only think that that's what you want them to do. Now, how did that work for you and your family dynamic? Because they obviously are all into Taekwondo. Right. What were your thoughts going into it as they got to the age where they could start?
Well, they got to the age where they could start in the womb because my wife is a black belt and now she's a master and she's a coach and she's, you know, I mean, she manages the team, which are now my kids and, you know, it was an easy thing for us as a family, but because when the children were born, they already had cousins, aunts and uncles who were already in it. And so it was a meeting place for the family, right? So the entire family, basically all my sisters, all my nephews, nieces, everybody had black belts or were going towards it. So it was natural for the kids just to hang out.
Yeah.
And so the martial art and achieving their black belt through the martial arts was not an option for any of the children, my nieces, nephews, anybody. This is something that you had to achieve, say like, you know, graduating high school or going to university and getting a degree.
Yeah.
I mean, that was our life. That's what we chose. The competition was and is still never pushed upon them, right? So obviously they made a commitment for, say, for instance, for Skylar for this Olympic cycle.
Sure.
So you have to meet up to those requirements or that commitment. But after 2020 or 2021, if she decides, hey, you know what, I no longer want to do this, we would sit down, we would discuss it. And if she says, I no longer want to do this because I just want to sit at home, my answer would be absolutely not.
Exactly.
Right.
You have to do something.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes. Or you have to have a goal to kind of work towards, right? So when I could speech getting was the same thing because I wanted to actually pursue school, university, right?
Yep.
And I didn't want to kind of do half of both.
Right.
Right? So it's the same thing with my children as well, too, but they love it. I mean, you know what? We're blessed in the sense that, especially with Skylar, I don't think there is even one time where I had to, like, I mean, throughout her whole life, one time that I had to say, Skylar, you need to train.
Yeah.
And she said, no, Dad, I don't want to. Like, not once. My boys, maybe a couple times, but a couple times is an amazing blessing to begin with because I can't imagine how many times I complained to my father about training. So my kids are way up here and they just love what they do. I mean, and they take pride, which is even more important for me because this has a family tradition and history, and they actually, what can I say? They actually appreciate it, and they take that to heart, which is obviously the, you know.
Well, that dynamic for me, when I hear that, it carries way more than just, this is a sport I did, you should do this sport. It's not even actually, to me, it doesn't sound like that's not even what it's about. I mean, the sport is almost the byproduct of the family and the coming together, and that's what brings you guys together. And it's such a great practice and discipline, and the sport that Taekwondo is. I love that. You know, I think about this, and we were talking about similarities, and, you know, when I was coaching and our boys were 2 and 3 years old, well, I had them in a volleyball cart.
Right.
And it kind of just happens organically because they're only in the gym there because, well, I'm not going to get a babysitter.
Exactly.
You can run around the gym and it happens to be volleyball that I'm coaching. For you, Taekwondo was your family's way. For us, you know, and for different families, music is their way
Absolutely.
Different things are their way. And people wonder, is your kid going into teaching because they felt pressure? No, it's because mom and dad are teachers and they actually sort of grew up going to school in the summer or something, helping their parents get their classroom ready. This is just a light bulb is going on for me here for both of us where, you know, you don't have to worry so much that they felt pressure to do it. If they felt at home there because that's how they were brought up. Okay. So then did you see in Skylar early and even in your boys now, I know they're younger than her, but Skylar is now sort of has already qualified for the Olympics and is making waves in the world a big time. Did you see that early in her?
You know what? As an athlete, no, but I saw something in her when she was 3 years of age. She has an older cousin, Samantha, who she just followed along. Like, she's 2 years older.
Okay.
Right? And she just followed her along like a little puppy dog, wanted to do everything that, you know, her cousin did.
Yeah.
And growing up, they were almost like best friends, right? I mean, when I say growing up, I mean 3, 6, 7, 10 years of age type thing.
Yeah.
And so my parents at that time had a motorhome. So they wanted to take Samantha and Skylar to Banff, you know, in their motorhome to camp there. And so Samantha said yes, and Skylar, you know, loves her mom and dad, her dad more.
I love that.
And she wanted to go.
Yeah.
But she didn't want to leave mom and dad. So she said yes, no, finally they said yes. And this is the last minute type thing. My parents, that's how we do things and we still do. And so we were actually at the same parking lot of St. Vital Shopping Center because that's where we met, my wife and I, and Skylar met my parents there, you know, with the motorhome because they were on their way. And so we had our bag packed and everything else and they're going and Skylar's like, no, yes, she's crying, running back to mom, no, and then she wants to go, not, no. And then all of, you know, we're talking with our parents in the motorhome, all of a sudden we don't see Skylar. She's sitting on the steps by herself, right? Mm-hmm. And then she turns around and says, I want to go. She made up her mind, that's it. And then I looked at my wife and I went, you know, like after she left, I go, she has something there. Like, and I didn't think it was Taekwondo. Sure. I just thought just that mindset of that determination. Yes. When she makes up her mind to do something, like she's going to be committed. And I think the thing was we started her in competition young at the age of like 2.5, 3 years of age.
Sure.
Nobody competed at that time. Yeah. Nobody really took Taekwondo at that time. Like, you know, although I started at 3, so it seemed normal for our family.
But here?
Here, or even in Korea, really, right?
Oh, yeah.
So she'd go to competitions, and she would always fight the older girls.
Sure.
And my philosophy with all my kids and even my athletes were, at that time, although it was more of a kind of a recreational level, is, okay, if there's no matchups, equal matchups, we can move you down or we can move you up. If we're going to move you down, let's not even compete, right?
Right.
So I used to move Skylar up all the time.
Okay.
All the time. So she used to fight her cousin Sam, who's 2 years older, and she used to lose to her all the time, you know, lose all the time. And people are like, you shouldn't do this. I'm like, you know, and she would cry. She cries because she's frustrated, not because she doesn't want to be in the ring. But people who didn't know this think that I'm forcing her,
mm-hmm.
right?
Interesting.
Yes. So, yeah, and then one day she just started winning and she's beating the girls that are older than her. And then you're just like, oh, I see something,
mm-hmm.
right? And and then so ever since she was young, she said, I want to, and it was never, I want to go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
I want to win a gold medal at the Olympics. That was what she said.
Wow.
Yes. And and that was a dream. And then when reality set in after she won the Junior Worlds, and that was in Burnaby, you know, you know, home court type thing. And she competed against, now she's competed against the double Olympic gold medalists in the seniors division and stuff. I think that's when she kind of realizes now it's not just a dream, it's reality. And now reality is I have to do this, this, and this, and this, and this. There's now that final climb up. I equate it to almost like the Everest. We had this conversation with my kids today in the morning where, like, you guys have reached where a lot of people have gone.
Yeah.
That last little bit of Everest is where people don't make.
Yep.
And people can't make it or they die in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what you're chasing right now. So what are we going to do from here to there to get there? What type of people who are getting there?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's their dream. I mean, we're here to help them along.
Totally.
But it's kind of funny because my father, his dream when he was younger was to go to the Olympics mm-hmm. in cycling.
Okay.
Yes. And I don't know if Korea was any good at cycling back then. I'm pretty sure not.
I have no idea.
And they had no athletes there. But that's what he wanted to do. So he made his father buy him a bike and a race bike. And he has pictures of him looking all cool and stuff. But never got there. Never had any coaching and stuff. I mean, right. I think at that time he was unrealistic.
Yeah.
But that was his dream.
Sure.
And when I speed skated, his dream for me, I don't know if it was my dream. His dream for me was to go to the Olympics. I guess maybe living a little vicariously through me,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
Because Taekwondo wasn't in the Olympics.
Right.
But I was good at short track. And it wasn't in the Olympics. Only long track was.
Wow.
And I wasn't quite good at long track because I wasn't at distance. I was quick.
Fast,
but
yeah.
Yes. I lasted 400 meters, shortest race in long track was 500.
Oh, no. Oh, no. 100 meters short.
100 meters short, yes. So I wasn't quite good enough to, you know.
Yeah. But how cool, generationally, you don't hit that actually, to me, is very unique story that two generations back, like from Skylar,
right.
Then you, and then your father
yes.
was speaking the word Olympics.
Absolutely.
Even. You know,
yes.
I don't think my grandparents would even have paid attention to that perhaps. Or maybe they did and I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should ask that question.
Perhaps. Yeah. But yeah. But it's kind of funny. I mean, you know, now when I speak to him about it, he's proud because now, obviously, I'm going to the Olympics as a coach.
Yes.
Not as an athlete,
yeah.
But he's more proud that his granddaughter is going to the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
So, and again, possibly, you know, more because,
yeah.
you know, they're young and maybe in 2024.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the goals. So that's what they want to achieve.
For sure.
And if we can reach it, that's great. And if we can't, then we tried, right?
Yeah. You talked about that little bit of the top of Everest. Do you have an answer to what you will do to reach that, to finish that peak climb?
I do, yes.
Okay.
And actually, it's kind of funny because, you know, sometimes timing is important.
Yeah.
And I read the, you know, the book, The Art of War, years ago. I mean, obviously, as a martial artist, if you didn't read that, you're just...
Okay.
You know, I never really understood it. I never really kind of put my mind towards it because I read it as a martial artist, but not as a coach, per se. And yesterday, I started reading that book again.
Yeah.
And so, just even reading the first chapter of it, I'm just like, okay.
Yeah.
Like a whole new mindset, right? So, I don't know if it will work.
Yeah.
I think it will. But again, this is trial and error, and this is what we need to do. But as you know, I mean, you know what? The difference between you going to the Olympics or you going to the Olympics and participating or the teams that won, mm-hmm. it isn't so much the physical game, it's the mental game.
Yeah.
Right? At that level.
Yeah.
So who was mentally on, who was mentally stronger at that time?
Yeah.
So that's what our final stage is. I know that Skylar is physically dominant.
Yes.
I mean, she does not lack anything to any athlete. If anything,
she's ahead. Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Now it's the mental game of, and that's where, again, working with Dr. Toogood, mm-hmm. you know, I'm relying on her to you know, help me out here. But again, that's the final, that's the last climb.
Right.
I think if you speak to any world-class athlete or Olympic medal, you know, whatever, that's, they'll always talk about that.
Yes.
They'll never talk about, hey, I wasn't fast. If you weren't faster or if you weren't stronger, you just lift more weights and you train.
Yeah.
The mental part is the stuff that's not tangible, that is the magic at the end, I think. And that's where Skylar has to reach that potential, and she will.
What's the greatest challenge for you now? Because mental training can be tough. I know as an athlete, we had to be tough and we had to be pushed. And not in a negative way, but you have to be pushed to your limit because your opponents are going to push you beyond your limit and you have to be ready. Is that more of a challenge because you're her dad, do you think? Or has it all just been established for you as her coach and you can keep that separate? Explain to us, because a lot of parents coach their kids. So Jay, we'd love to hear from you. You're at the highest level now with your daughter. What's the challenge?
I get this, or especially the last couple of years, I got this question asked quite a bit. Especially by the taekwondo community, you know, because there's a lot of people in my position where they're training their own athletes because they run a school and they have kids and they, you know.
Yeah.
For us, I think the magic is we don't separate difference between coach and dad. I think a lot of people, they say, well, you have to have that, you know, separation. Ours is no.
Yeah.
Dad is coach and coach is dad and we are who we are and that's it.
Good
so
for
you. Our family, our personal dynamic as father and daughter is carried through between coach and athlete, if you will. Mm-hmm. But there's no separation between the two. From myself, I have to be a little bit more strategical in terms of not be so emotionally, not invested, because obviously as a parent, you're more invested in your kids than other athletes. If you say you're not, you're lying. But I have to learn, again, this is just my growth as a father, I don't even say as a coach, is not to, because you leave the competition, you ride back with them, you fly back with them, you get home. So really, at the end of the day, I feel sorry for the athlete, my children, than for me.
Sure.
Right? And maybe some ways for me too, because out of mind, out of sight, now we can actually regroup.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I am trying to learn is that, you know, if you ever return an email that really isn't so positive and someone's critiquing you, they always say, sleep on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Write 3 drafts and never send it.
No, that's right.
Right?
Yeah, that's very good advice.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's almost the same, but I have to actually send it because it's about growth. It's not about complaint.
Right.
It might seem critiquing, but it's not to criticize. It's to build.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now, are we perfect? No. Do we have to, you know, do we go about it the right way all the time? The answer is no.
Yeah.
So our emotions get the best of us sometimes, but it's at the end is even when you make a mistake, just like an athlete, when you make a mistake, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
Right?
Is it,
do you dwell on it or are you able to say, hey, you know what, let's forget about it, let's move on because that's just part of what we're doing. I mean, obviously, there's a difference between that and abuse. Abuse is totally different, yeah. But we're not even going there.
Now, I'm curious about the role that your wife plays with Skylar and your other kids, because it sounds to me, right, you're the main coach. You're right. You're the active coach. You're going to the Olympics, and you're going to be her. You're her head coach, so to speak. But your wife knows just as much and is just as passionate, right? I mean, she's a master and a coach, you say. So what role does she play for your kids?
She's the balance. She's the voice of reason. She's all of those things. obviously, she is certified to be a coach, and she's coached when the children were young. I mean, even before I coached Skylar, my wife coached her first.
Oh, really?
First tournament when she was younger, right? but again, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the expertise of what I do, obviously, she understands it, but I can't do what she does either.
Right.
It's no matter what, whether it's husband and wife or whether it's coach head, co-coach or assistant coach, it's all about teamwork with the athletes. Yeah. So I'm sure it's not easy for her to kind of, because at the end of the day, I'm like, this is the way it's done.
Yep.
And I make the final decisions when it comes to it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's tougher when, you know, you go home together as well too.
Right.
Yeah. But she is the one that finds balance. She's the one that organizes the team. She's the one that basically when I can't or I shouldn't, she's the one that picks up all of that slack.
Yeah.
And she's there no matter what. So she's the one that's in the background.
Sure.
She doesn't get the glory. I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
But she's the one that really basically, and I say this, it's not a cliche or anything else, is the one that actually is the one that patches us back up when we need to.
Sure.
Not only from my perspective as her husband and the coach, but the kids, you know, and athletes, per se. So.
When she can be their sounding board, and right? If they need to share something and they can't share it directly with you at that time, then she takes that spot. Plus, she knows what they're talking about and can completely relate. That's a championship family affair here we have going. So moving forward, what is a highlight of coaching your kids and coaching at this level, whether they're your kids or not?
I don't know if there's a highlight. Being with my family is the highlight. I mean, my wife and I talk about it all the time is, you know, because we are so invested in what we're doing, even with her. Could you imagine if you weren't a part of this in terms of, like, you're a part of it as a parent.
Sure.
But you're not part of it in terms of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our lives would be different. And we always talk about it. Could you imagine if, I mean, I don't think I could. I'm like one of those sideline coaches. Not to an extent where I'm bad, but, you know, I need to help my children in some ways. So I know that about me. But at the end of the day, I couldn't even imagine me being in a position and my children, and we don't know any better, are coached by somebody else and they're traveling elsewhere and we're on the sidelines. I mean, majority of the parents, that's what they do. That's what their life is. But for us, we don't know any different.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, sometimes my wife and I talk about that. It's like, could you imagine? Like, she'd go, you cannot survive. Like, you would. I said, I know. So it is a blessing that we're able to actually succeed together and grow together and experience this together. I mean, otherwise our life, like I said, would be different. I mean, different experiences, you know, kids going to different places. Even my three children, if one of them did, you know, hockey and the other one did baseball and one did taekwondo, I mean, our lives would be completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't plan it like this. I mean, in some ways you hope for it.
Sure.
But the kids, I mean, they love what they do, and like I said, I mean, it's a total blessing.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's really cool. And it is family time for
Absolutely.
You guys. Yeah.
Well, that's the hard part too, right? I mean, when does family time end and begin, and when does...
Right.
So we're finding a better balance because of this whole COVID situation.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But before then, I mean, after 2016 with Skylar, it's been a whirlwind for 3 years of chasing those points and traveling and as much as we did it as a family, it was tough. We were hardly ever home. We were away from our business, and you know, and I thank my guys at the academy for you know, running a tight ship and making sure that we didn't have to worry, right? But yeah, it's been quite a challenge.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, last coaching question. COVID hits. She's ready. She's qualified. The qualification process is long. You talked about that. You have to get points and all that. But you get to that point, and then you find out Olympics isn't happening this year. It's next year. How does that affect training in Taekwondo? Because every sport's a little bit different. How does that affect her? Does she have to qualify again? Does she stay qualified? And how do you face this year now? It's now way longer to get her to that mountaintop in 2021.
Correct. I mean, I think IOC made the right decision in terms of saying those people who qualified their positions are qualified.
I mean,
not only in our sport, but every sport, right?
Good.
Now, it's what the teams do in terms of team sports. You know, that.
Yeah.
Luckily, we're an individual sport, so we don't have to worry about it. Her spot is guaranteed.
Right.
When we first heard the news that it's going to be postponed, I mean, obviously, we were worried and we're concerned, but not as much as when Canada announced that Canada will not be sending a team, even if the Olympics happen.
Yes.
That is when our hearts dropped. So for a couple days, it was, I mean, you know, we try to be strong and Skylar try to hide it. But after the fact, when we spoke, I mean, that was probably the most devastating. Not that we disagreed with the decision. We didn't.
No.
Right? Because at that time, we just didn't know what, from left to right, from top to bottom. Right? But the thing was, is we might miss the Olympics. What if it happens, everything's better, but Canada already announced that we're not going? That was probably the worst couple days ever in our sporting life, right, or whatever. And when IOC came back and said, hey, we're postponing it, that's when we're like, and because Skylar is young, she hasn't even hit her stride yet. And we had, my wife and I had a plan for, not so much for the boys because they develop differently,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
for Skylar, we had a plan of how we wanted to progress, what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So even in 2016, when she won the Junior World Championships, when I was interviewed, I remember, this is what we talked about, this part of our plan, I remember saying, I believe that she was probably strategically one of the worst of all the competitors in there. And they were surprised, like, what do you mean? Because we wanted to develop her physical first. My oldest son, Tegu, he's very cerebral. So he used his brain all the time.
Yeah.
So when you can win and be successful doing that, the body doesn't develop as much, right? Because you don't have to.
Right. You use different things.
Absolutely, right? So I knew that for just my experiences in sport, the strategy can come last, right? Because as you get older, the body doesn't get any better.
Yeah.
But the mind does.
It sure does. You get wiser, you get more experience.
Yes, because that's why we always talk about my fellow coach and I were just like, could you imagine if we knew what we do now with our bodies when we were younger? Everybody, right? but for Skylar, she just turned 21 this year.
Yeah.
The one that we're chasing, obviously, is Jay Jones from Great Britain, the double Olympic gold medalist. Mm-hmm. She's getting older. She's trying to maintain. She's trying to just hold on and going for a third gold medal. And good for her. But at the end of the day, we're not going to let that happen. And so being 21, next year, 22, when the Olympics happens, giving us that extra year to not only physically prepare, but train what we did not have a chance to do. Because like I said, after Junior Worlds, that's when reality set in that we could do this,
mm-hmm.
right? Although it was our goal, you know? And then just chasing. We were learning and she was developing, and me as a coach too, as we were competing. That's not real training.
Mm.
That's just, you know? So now that we have the full year and a bit, now we're working with CSCM, right? Canadian Sports Center Manitoba, working as a team. We're able to actually experiment and do things from a nutritional, from a strength and conditioning, from a psychological perspective, things that we wanted to do, but we just did not have time to do, right? And the beauty for Skylar is that she lives with her coach. She lives with her team manager, which is her mom.
Yeah.
She lives with her training partner, which is her brothers. And we have a pretty good setup in our house, but 10 minutes away is our academy. So really, at the end of the day, the scenario is virtually perfect. It would be great if we had female training partners, you know, that can simulate her
mm-hmm.
her opponents. That was this, you know, that lived with us as well too. But short of that, I mean,
pretty
you know,
sweet.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yes,
in a COVID situation, you guys are set because that's your circle. And so you can and carry on. Amazing. Well, 2021 couldn't come soon enough. We're so excited to watch you. And while I will be watching Skylar, but we'll know you're behind it because now we've gotten to know you so well. And, you know, I do have to ask you one question that's come to mind. And when we talk about the psychology of sport and the way you speak about what you're going for, a lot of people are afraid to do that. Because you said, we're chasing her and we're not going to let her three-peat. You're not afraid to say we're gonna win. That's what we're going for. What gives you that confidence? Do you have a word of advice or encouragement for athletes and coaches to really be willing to say we're going for it?
Personally, from my end, I'm not afraid not to succeed, right? And you know, it's not about failure. It's not, right?
Yeah.
And failure isn't a bad thing. You talk to, again, some of the, all the great athletes, they've all failed, and they all always talk about learning more from their failures and, you know. Mm-hmm. So I teach, we've always taught the same thing within martial arts as well, too, within our program, is that don't be afraid to fail. If you're looking for that black belt, you know what, take the easy way, go online, order something online, call yourself a super duper grandmaster, put 20 stripes in the belt and say, hey, and hang it on your wall. What does that mean, right? So basically, sometimes you could be the most well prepared, just have a bad day, and you don't pass your test. Right. That happens.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, right? So for us as well too is that yes, we are reaching for the ultimate. That's our goal.
Sure.
Why? Because I know that Skylar's capable of it. We can do it.
Yep.
If she couldn't, I would be realistic and say, well, Skylar, you know what? Why don't we try this step first?
Right.
And we did, but she kind of exploded so fast, and you know, but I don't know. It's more when I was growing up, I never liked. Canada's a little bit different now. We're having that little bit of a brashness, if you will.
Yeah.
But always watching the Olympics, I remember like 84 Olympics. 84 was Los Angeles, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then 88, 84. I remember like watching Carl Lewis and you know, Mitch Gaylord, the teams, the gymnastics teams and stuff, and they were just like. Attitude, you know, we are the best.
Yes.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And the Canadian mentality was, well, you know what, we're nice. We'll try to do our best. And if we get on the podium, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, why?
Yeah.
Like, if that's the case, this isn't a local tournament. This is the Olympics.
Yeah.
If you're going to go to the Olympics, have the mindset to beat a champion, whether it's realistic right there or not.
Yeah.
Right? If I'm going to get into a fight, I don't care who I'm fighting. I better think that I'm going to win.
Sure.
That's my best chances.
That's right.
Right? So that's what I grew up with. That's what my father taught me as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so growing up as well, too, King, we're not afraid not to succeed.
Yeah.
I mean, if she tries her best, it doesn't happen. I'm still as proud as... We might not be as happy.
Yes.
Happy and proud is different. I'm totally proud of... If this is as far as Skylar gets now, I'd be more than proud... Or just as proud as if she actually won an Olympic gold medal.
Yep.
But we wish the Olympic gold medal.
Well, exactly. But, and,
yes.
and saying that, I wanted to highlight that because that has given you and her the opportunity now to go for it and the chance to win. And I've often said that. If you don't risk it all, you can't have it all. I feel really proud and strong of Canada just in how you're carrying this and carrying your sport into the Olympic Games. I think that's amazing. I have some rapid fire questions for you that I want to get to before we're done. I think these are neat and great way to get to know our new friend, Master Jay Park. What is your favorite sound?
Sound of metals clanking together.
What is something you have struggled with that continues to affect you now that no one would know looking at you?
I think maybe body image. And, I was really skinny when I was young.
Yeah.
When I was young, 6 months, I got some burns on my body just because of an accident with and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So growing up, obviously, you try to kind of hide it. And I still have a little bit of that, although it really doesn't matter. I mean, the one on my arm is quite visible, right? So, I mean, I think that's it. But
thanks for sharing. That's great. Describe an ordinary moment.
My life is an ordinary moment. This is just life.
Ordinary for you. Not necessarily for everyone else, but that's your ordinary moment. Perfect. What is one piece of advice you want to pass along to others?
Always say, yes, I can.
What is a quote you love?
I really can't say the actual quote, but it comes from Risky Business with Tom Cruise.
Okay.
He says, sometimes you got to say what the... Because I saw that movie when I was younger.
Yes.
And ever since then, I don't know why it stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, yeah, you know what? Whatever happens, just sometimes you just got to say, just let it go.
What is your favorite failure?
What is my favorite failure? My favorite failure is my last race in speed skating. Yes. Mm-hmm. I had already made up my mind or discussed with my father about quitting. And my last race was my short track race.
Okay.
at the University of Manitoba at the Max Bell Center. Okay. And I was actually I was actually against, at 400 meters, I was against the current world record holder, the world champion, the junior world champion. And so it was like kind of Mark Lackey and Dubray and all those guys. I mean, it was just like, and I made it to the finals. Mm-hmm. And again, I was quick off the line, so everybody knew that. So, and usually after, you know, it's short track inside it. So I was winning the first lap, which is kind of normal, okay. Could be normal. Second lap, I was expecting them to pass me. They didn't pass me. So I'm like, oh, okay, they're going to pass me any moment now. Third lap, they're not passing me still. I'm like, what the heck? I have a chance to win this thing. Fourth lap, first corner, still they didn't pass me. Last corner, I'm just like, I'm going to win this. Dug my toe in, wiped out, bang, bang, bang. I came in last, obviously. And that was my best failure. Yeah. Because if I would have won, I would have kept with the speed skating, and my life wouldn't be what it is right now.
Wow.
So.
Interesting how our paths take a turn.
Absolutely.
And it's for the best. Do you have a book you would recommend for other people to read, and why?
Obviously, The Art of War, mm-hmm. as a martial artist, but I think just in life, the lessons that you can learn. Mm-hmm. And as I was kind of saying to you earlier, depends on when you read that book. You have a different understanding of what the strategies are, not only for fighting, but for life, yeah. Right? So when I read it when I was younger, I think I was about 20-somewhat years old, you know, I got stuff out of it. I just don't remember what it was, but it definitely wasn't... I started reading the game yesterday just because, you know,
yeah.
for my kids and try to see what I can pass along to them.
Yeah.
And because I'm at a different stage in life, just from that first chapter, I'm like, oh my gosh, how come I didn't realize this?
Yeah.
So I'm just like... I'm just eager to read, and I'm not a huge reader. Like mm-hmm. I, you know, not that I love to read so much, but you know, there are certain things that, you know, I mean, Tim Ferriss, I read his books, yes. with all of the little short snippets of, you know, what successful people do and things like that. Mm-hmm. So you know, those are important. But I think The Art of War is definitely something that, like I said, I mean, I think 10 years from now, if I read it, I'm probably gonna get a different understanding.
Yeah,
maybe how to be a better grandfather.
Do you have a few songs you love? Like, does music play a part in your life?
Of course.
Yeah.
As a Korean male, Careless Whisper.
No way.
Absolutely.
And why?
I don't know. It's just...
Just love it.
Just, you know what? I just love
Good
it.
For
and,
you.
And it's kind of funny because my wife used to bug me all the time and, you know, and she still bugs me about it. But then we watch some, like, Korean dramas or movies and stuff. They're always playing Careless Whisper and the Koreans are watching. And it's funny because American Idol.
Yes.
I don't know what season it was, like 6 or 7 or something. Yeah. There was a Korean guy who made it like kind of pretty far.
Yeah.
Guess what he sang is one of his songs, Careless Whisper.
Did he really?
No Shoes On. And my wife is like shaking her head, just laughing, going, typical, right? So, yeah. So I think that's my all-time favorite song.
Yeah.
If you will. And I actually, it's kind of funny because I work out to kind of love songs.
Okay.
No, seriously.
Really? Air
Supply and things
really?
Like that. And, yeah. And Careless Whispers. I don't like the... You know, I like, you know, like the 80s and 90s,
yeah, yeah,
kind of
yeah.
like techno yeah. music, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. like, I mean, MC Hammer, you know, but yeah, most of the times they, yeah, family always bugs me. I'm just, that's yeah. what pumps me up. I think I kind of turned, you know, think back to when, you know, you had the dances and there was the snowball and one of the girls actually just kind of rejected me and I think just kind of feeding the hate fire, I'm not sure.
Okay. Who are 2 or 3 people who have influenced you and how did they impact your life?
First of all, my father. I mean, again, sounds like a cliche, but, you know, just amazing.
Yeah.
If I look back at what he did, if I look back, and even now, the selflessness that he has, like,
yeah.
it is, to this day, he lives for his kids, right? I mean, and when I say he lives for his kids, it's not that he does everything for us,
no.
but, like, it's, because I know a lot of guys in my situation where their father is the master or their grandmaster or whatever,
sure.
and they're running a school with their father.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, what we see is the father
yep. you know, laying down the law.
Just bashing them down, because they can't meet up to the expectations. My father was always about teaching me, right? And he always said, this is yours. This is yours that you're going to leave for your kids. Do the right things. I'll be here for you. But this is yours,
yeah.
right? So when I used to do something wrong, he would always be there. I'm 51 years old, and he still yeah, you still critiques everything I do, and I'm grateful for it. Yeah. Sometimes I don't want to hear it.
Sure.
But that is what, you know, and like his family is everything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I love that. I mean, because he's the one that created this.
Yeah.
So I think, and I think my kids see it as well too. Mm-hmm. And then second is my wife. I mean, our family as Koreans, usually, especially back then, we weren't very affectionate. I mean, affection wasn't something that we showed outwardly and things like that. And I was kind of talking to her about it yesterday too, or a couple days ago. And, you know, we kind of argued and then we kind of came back full circle or whatever.
Yes.
And yeah, she's the one that basically brought, for me anyways, that emotion back to our family that we really needed at that time. Because in 96, '96 is when my oldest sister passed away from cancer, right? So during that time, we really didn't know how to kind of show emotions much either with each other and things like that.
Right.
And I met my wife in '96 earlier, so she kind of met my sister, and things happened pretty quick from there. But So I think about the people that kind of have helped me. Mm-hmm. And then there's three coaches in particular that I just, you know, that I'm really thankful for their friendship. One is Juan Moreno in Miami.
Yeah.
He's U.S. Olympic coach, he's an Olympian. He's now working with the Brazilian Taekwondo. Another Olympic coach, Oi Lee. Now he's working with, from Minneapolis, working with the Haiti Taekwondo Federation.
Wow.
I mean, just very selfless man. Yeah. You know, the friendship, but the partnership that we have. And then another one is just in Toronto, Master In Kyung Kim, Olympian, but just the intelligence he has for the game, mm-hmm. is just unbelievable. And so if I look at my kind of Taekwondo mentors and friends that I really, really kind of appreciate as a coach, mm-hmm. those three are the ones that stand out.
Amazing. And still surrounding yourself with that excellence is just incredible. And now you've brought that here. I mean, it's here in Manitoba because of, well, you're bringing that to us and you're sharing that with us. And as much as we've talked about you coaching your children, you've also, I mean, you coach all the students and those that compete in your, well, not just compete, but those that learn at the TRP Academy. How many would you have there?
We have two locations.
Yeah.
Our main location's on Schofield. The other one is in the Transcona area. So usually about 500, 600
wow.
students.
Yeah.
We run a after-school program. We're running our summer camps right now, mm-hmm. so we keep busy. But but right now, my high-performance team is just my children
yeah.
and my nephew,
yep.
Andrew. But we used to have more kids in the and this is pretty much it for my high performance with my group, anyways.
Yep.
But you know, we've had success. There's another athlete, Zach, who basically won a bronze medal when Skyler won the gold, and that was like just came out of left field.
Wow.
We knew that was the goal to get, and he was able to do it.
Nice.
And then another athlete who basically won a bronze at the Youth Olympic Games, and we've had really good success. I mean, mm-hmm. We've had great parents who work with us. That's
yep.
Teamwork is important. So they trusted myself and my wife to be mm-hmm. able to. Do what we did and to train the students to the best of their potential. I mean, it's been awesome.
Love it. Love it. Thanks for your passion. Thanks for bringing that to us. And I have loved this. So you are a hero in our midst and we appreciate you joining our podcast.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. I mean, I had a blast. And
good.
Like I said, I mean, to be sitting in front of an Olympian, I mean, it's
thank you.
It's mm-hmm. and to share the conversation similarities as well too,
yeah.
and it's kind of it's nice because you understand when I actually talk about all of these things,
yes,
because you've been there as an athlete and now as a as
yep.
a coach and stuff and mm-hmm. with your own children, yeah, it's
for
a
sure.
lot more comfortable speaking with you simply because although I met you for the first time, it's a nice connection.
That's Master Jay Park. What an honor to have made this connection and to have shared this time with someone who has a mission to develop athletes to reach their full potential and reach the top of the podium at World Championships and Olympics. Jay, your efforts at the highest levels of competition and doing it all with your own family is impressive. We are so looking forward to the result of this final climb for you and your daughter, Skyler Park, at the now 2021 Summer Olympic Games. So confident, so brave, and so accomplished. No question, Master Jay Park is a hero in our midst. Thanks so much for joining us.